Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good evening and welcome to Tunnel Vision, a show presented to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Jack Smith, joined in studio by Ryan Abraham and Shotgun Spratling, and we're here to discuss USC's loss 34-32 to Utah in the Coliseum. The Trojans fall to the Utes for the third straight time in the last 2 years, four consecutive times dating back in this series, and potentially the last one that they play for a while, and USC just can't get it done against the Utes. And we've got a lot to talk about today, of course, with the loss, the ramifications for what it has for USC's season, as well as the future of the program. If you have thoughts, whether you're on YouTube or Facebook, you can leave your comments in the chat and we can get to those a little bit later, or you can call into the show 5124-TUNNEL. But if you're here, make sure you're hitting the like button, the subscribe button, as we give you our thoughts on USC's loss. But guys, just your maybe initial reactions to USC losing to Utah once again.
Yeah, so it's a tough one, and it's great to have Shotgun back in studio. He's back here on the West Coast, and Jack, a lot of compliments. We've got talking to people at the House of Victory tailgate. Everyone's like, Jack, how old is he? He's great.
And 13, 14?
Yeah, Shaka was trying to put... That's I'm like, he's 20. And they're like, oh, no. But you got a lot of compliments, so great to see you here, too. Yeah, you know, this was Lincoln Riley's first ever loss in the Coliseum, and he mentioned that and in the press room there after the game. It was... it kind of went the way, in the beginning, the sort of the way this team had been playing. There's some... You know, spots where you have greatness there. USC scores touchdowns on their first two drives and then just sort of like gets away from what was working. I think they had like 100 yards rushing in the first quarter. It didn't really do much after that. I think four consecutive punts and then the half and then a punt and a fumble or whatever it was. It was just a whole bunch of unproductive drives after those first couple. And then it's sort of like, oh crap, now we got to need to score. And it just feels like they're getting away from whatever's been working, or just it looks kind of clunky. It doesn't look like it's a well-oiled machine on offense like we've seen before. And I think the defensive stuff, we've seen a lot of the same kind of issues. I mean, Notre Dame numbers weren't bad. It was the first time all year they didn't give up like career yardage or you know, a career day to somebody, but it was all the turnovers that didn't really, you know, Notre Dame didn't have to do that much, but they got some stops when it was long drives. You know, they did get some stops there, and they continue to do some good things, and they'll get a stop here or there. You get the pick six, which was a huge play, but man, when you're not getting those stops, it's like, it's just bad. It's not like kind of bad, it's like just bad. You know, you can't go from like, oh, three and out or pick six or touchdown, you know, and it seems like that's sort of what USC is doing, feast or famine. But you'd love to see this offense be more consistent. They just haven't been. And Caleb Williams doesn't look like the same guy. And the defense, while I think they're getting more stops, they're still giving up huge plays. You can't get, you know, career nights. You're talking about Bryson Barnes, the pig farmer, who, I mean, they were a limited one-dimensional offense, you know, coming into this game. And he looked like an All-American out there. And then you let a safety, Sione Vaki, who you knew was good because he ran the ball well last week. He ran the ball fine, but man, catching wheel routes out of the backfield, like that was 150 yards receiving, two touchdowns, like that. You can't let stuff like that happen. You can't be exploited. Like, that's probably going to be his biggest game of the year, and it was against USC. And that's happened a lot throughout the the course of the season, where the biggest game was Amarion Miller, the Colorado wide receiver. That's his biggest game of the year. The San Jose State wide receiver is only 3 touchdowns of the year, at least as of a couple weeks ago. We're against USC. You can't let that stuff happen. So it's disappointing. I thought they would be able to kind of turn things around, especially playing at home, especially playing a beat-up Utah team. And obviously they weren't able to. The Cotton Bowl was really disappointing, not winning the Pac-12 championship game. But as far as like expected to win kind of thing, in a game that was super important, that you needed to get some revenge after losing twice last year, to come out and play like that, this is the most disappointed, I would say, where I thought they'd kind of come in and play better, and they did not.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's as disappointing as the Cotton Bowl, because you were way ahead and you blew it.
Yeah.
This one is just, they're not playing well. That's what's probably the most disappointing thing when you watch them, is they're not playing well in any facet, really. They're very inconsistent. They're very up and down. Honestly, they play like they're coddled. They're soft. They don't talk to the media afterwards. Lincoln Riley doesn't make them available. They can't do anything when they're seeing different looks. They can't stick with what's working. Like, that's the biggest disappointment to me, is watching this and you see Marshawn Lloyd tearing through the defense. Austin Jones was running hard as hell and picking up 6-7 yards, and they're talking about on the broadcast, like, whoa, they're running the ball against this Utah defense that doesn't let anyone run the ball. Yeah, we don't want to do that anymore. That was fun for a quarter, guys. Let's cut that out, though. They ran the ball 6 times with the running backs in the first quarter. They ran the ball 6 times the rest of the game with the running backs.
Yeah.
Marshawn Lloyd had a 45-yard run. He ends up with, 7 carries? How do you – you got 86 yards. You had 12 yards a carry. Now, I know he fumbled.
Yeah.
And I understand that. But, okay, well, Austin Jones is averaging over 6 yards a carry. Well, we'll give him 5 touches.
Yeah. They got away from it for sure.
Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, if it's working, and you know what else is working when you do that? Play action. The catch by Taj Washington, amazing catch by Taj Washington. Play action pass. Watch the linebacker level on that play. Everyone stops, and turns around and takes off trying to run. Now he had to beat the safety on that as well. But those are the type of things. Caleb Williams crushed it last year on play action passes. There's no play action if you're not going to run the ball. They would rather say, we're going to play everyone back because we know you have talented receivers. We'll play our linebackers back. And until you force the issue, saying we'll run it and we'll run it and we'll run it down your throat and force you to bring someone else in the box, or your linebackers have to react to the run first. If you're not going to do that, my first step as a linebacker against USC would always be back. I will give up the false step, and maybe it's an extra yard, maybe it's 2, maybe a change on a 3rd and 1 or something. But otherwise, I would take a false step to give up an extra yard every single time, because that extra yard of the 12 times that they may hand the ball off is way more than one pass play, or is way less than one pass play. So why would I not do that every single time? And so that's making it that much more difficult on Caleb Williams. That's making it that much more difficult on the offensive line. And I thought the offensive line played much better in this game with the switch and everything than they did last week, at least. So, they gave Caleb time. There were times where he didn't hit receivers. Lincoln Riley is absolutely correct when he says it's all of us. We're all making mistakes up and down.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. But it starts with calling the play right. If you're running the ball consistently, do it over and over and over. And then you can pop one over the top. USC. And then on the defensive side, you look at it, and USC, I thought, should come in with a very similar game plan as they had against Notre Dame last year. This guy can't throw to beat us. We're going to stuff your rush attack. Doesn't matter what he does. If he throws for 300 yards, if Bryson Barnes throws for 300 yards and USC holds them under 100 yards, you would feel confident that they would be able to win that game. But when you give up 235 and 3 touchdowns on 23 attempts, when you're giving up over 10 yards per attempt on a passing, and you also give up almost 250 yards rushing, you can't win that game.
Bryson Barnes had almost 17 yards per completion in this game. Who, like, what? Like, that is insane.
That's fine if they don't run the ball at all against you. But you can't do both. You can't say, well, it's a pig farmer and he's not going to be able to beat us throwing, but also they're, Jaquinta Jackson's going to run for 117 yards.
Yeah. The most yardage, Jack, I think you mentioned this, right? The most yardage Utah's had all season, 482 yards or something like that. That's their highest total.
So they hadn't had a 200-yard passing game all year, and they had four passing touchdowns all season entering yesterday. And Bryson Barnes had one touchdown all season entering yesterday. He had four total. They had three total passing touchdowns, which almost, you know, basically almost evened what they had coming into the game. They had a 200-yard passing day while still running the ball for 270 yards. It was, I think, good in some respects where they got some stops, but I still just, you look at it and you can't quite understand how you allow nearly 500 yards while still getting those stops, only giving up three third downs. Shotgun and I talked about this earlier. It was the big play was one of the big issues again for USC, but it's like even when the defense has a good day, they're still bad.
That's true, and Lincoln Riley talks about this, and this is going to be one of those things where I get it. You're looking at some of the positives, because there were, I think there's definitely more positives this year with the defense than there were last year, but it's almost like if you don't get the great play, and I think he looks at the special teams this way too. It's like, oh, that was a great punt return, but there was a lot of other bad special teams plays in the game. Utah coming into this game, well, after this game, they're 100th in the country in yards per play. They're 4.9 yards per play. That's their average. Their last three games, they're averaging 5.3 yards per play. Against USC, it was 6.9. Like, more than 2 yards per, like, that's huge. More, you know, for every play you run, you get two extra yards against USC than you do on your average. And it's not like they had a whole bunch last week either. You know, like, they did better offensively last week. But this is a team that's been so limited offensively, you can't let stuff like this happen. It's not like Cam Rising was out there. It's not like Brent Keefe was out there. This was a patchwork offense that they have a safety playing running back, you know, your third string quarterback in there. You're just finding ways to make it work. Those are the kind of offenses you need to just throttle and just like don't let them go anywhere. UCLA throttled. They lost the game, but throttled this Utah offense at home. You can't do stuff like Oregon State when they, you know, when Utah went there, 7 points. Like, that's the kind of stuff you have to do. The kind of talent USC has on defense, they have to be able to shut people down, not giving up the most yards they've had all season, not allowing him to triple his touchdown. You know, just he didn't look like a good quarterback at all, and you made him look like a good quarterback. You know, you just can't let that kind of stuff happen. So I was one of the believers that was like, hey, this defense is better, and it probably is, but it's definitely nowhere near good enough, allowing something like that to happen to this is a very limited Utah team, and they came in motivated and did things that we hadn't seen them do all year. And that's the biggest, to me, the indictment on this defense is you can't let teams do something that they haven't done all year and do it really well. And that seems to happen over and over and over again.
Shotgun, before you hop in, we've got two super chats that I want to get to,
but
then we can move on. The first one, $5.99 from Mr. Andrew 2800. He says, all is not lost. I believe LSU won the national championship with two losses in 2007. I don't know which one of you guys wants to break the news here.
They're not winning the national championship.
You can't get into the BCS playoff. I mean, you can't get to the college football playoff with two losses now. Yeah. So, you know, it's practically it's not absolute. It just has never happened.
Yeah.
So there is the possibility that everyone beats up on everyone and somehow you – but what would give you any inclination that this team can go on the road and beat Cal, come home and beat Washington, go on the road and beat Oregon, come home and beat UCLA, and then beat whoever in a Pac-12 championship? What gives you any inclination to that? They don't – they're not playing to their potential. If they were – if they played this, they lost to Utah in the same fashion they lost last year,
yeah,
you'd say, okay, that's a possibility. Couple mistakes. There was this call here. This were people last year going fire Lincoln Riley after they lost to Utah? No. Granted, it's his first one ever for the program, but in the same situation, if you flip the seasons, they wouldn't be saying the same thing because they played well. It's just, you know, things didn't go the way. It was a great game. They got beat in that game. They beat themselves yesterday, and they've beat themselves the last 2 weeks. The turnovers against Notre Dame, and they really have beaten themselves a couple weeks before that. They just didn't take the L on the scoreboard.
Yeah. I do agree with the super chat, and thank you very much, by the way. All is not lost. Like, there's still positive you can get from a season. It's a gauntlet of a bunch of games coming up, and if you can play to your potential and win them, you can go and win the Pac-12. I think that's still very important, but this is not a college football playoff national championship type of team. They were, you know, technically into it. You know, Caleb Williams was in it for the Heisman. Like, all that stuff is gone. But all is not lost. I mean, any season you beat UCLA, if you get to beat an Oregon team on the road that's been, you know, eating your lunch and recruiting, that's great. High-flying Washington team. There's really good things that can happen.
There's cool opportunities.
But not all is not
lost.
They're
in an advantageous position in the conference.
They have opportunities, but yes, not – I would say all is not lost, but I also would say not national championship thing.
Then, yeah, it's no team has ever made the college football playoff since its inception with four teams with two losses. It just hasn't happened yet. Yeah. So is this really the year that you think it's going to happen? And then also, do you think USC is finishing the season with two losses? I would say the money says no. We've got one more, $4.99 from James on YouTube. I'm trying to pull it up right here. He basically says, is this a case of other coaches catching up to Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams' tendencies?
If you want to go for it, go for it.
I don't know about the tendencies thing. This, just from, you know, we're around this stuff. My feeling sort of is, and Lincoln Riley kind of alluded to this a little bit, like they had a lot of success last year. And I don't know if it's like reading your own press clippings and stuff. Sometimes what you do to succeed, like the work that you put in the first year or the first time around isn't the same. And I'm not saying that they're not putting in work, but there could be some complacency. There could be, hey, I already won the Heisman. I got to do better than that. It feels like there's pressing going on. It feels like they're kind of doing things of for different reasons, I think, than you would last year. Because I don't see why this offense should be worse than it is that it was last year. But it does seems that things seem to just be like not quite clicking there. So it seems like things are a little off, maybe just mentally from, you know, what your attitude was last year to this year, if that makes sense.
Cohesion is not there on the offense. Yep. You know, whether it be a receiver, you know, whether you're putting in a freshman, you put in Deuce Robinson on a third down, and he runs and tries to go inside, and Caleb Williams wants him to come back. Just not the connection there. You know, a couple games back was the Arizona game. Dorian Singer goes inside. Caleb wants him to sit. You know, those type of things are issues, and they're not getting cleaned up. And then you go to the offensive line, and you know, you're having some communication issues as well as getting beat at times, and then now suddenly Caleb's under pressure more. Teams are also scouting. Yes, there are scouting Caleb. Notre Dame did a great job. How many times last year did he bail out to his back shoulder, to his throwing shoulder, spin away, and create more time? Teams know that's his preferred move, and so they're all trying to rush on the backside. They're trying to rush high at him at that back shoulder and force him to step up. And the problem is the pocket is being pushed back more consistently this year with the guard and center combo than it was last year's guard and center combo. And I think part of that is last year you had Andrew Voorhees and Brett Nealon along with Justin Dedich. You had two All-Americans versus Justin Dedich and two transfers. And now Mason Murphy. So, you know, it's one, those three guys had played together for years, so the communication is going to be even that much more in sync. You know, and you're going to fight a little bit more if you've been in the trenches with somebody for 4 years or 5 years with those guys than someone that's brand new to you. It's just that human nature of how much do you care for the person beside you. And you can love your teammate, and yeah, I want to be a good teammate and everything, but there's just something more when you're more like family, and those offensive linemen last year were more like family. Their families actually spent so much time together.
Yeah, we'd see them at tailgates and stuff.
And you know, RJ wrote the story about Brett Nealon and Andrew Voorhees deciding to come back and talking about with the families about, you know, how they grew into, you know, going to every game together and all those type of things, and they enjoy the trips more for outside of the games than going to see their sons play necessarily because they get to hang out with their friends and family type of thing. So, you know, I think there was going to be a regression naturally there. But you thought with the way the receivers were coming at, that's a stacked room. And now in the way Marshawn Lloyd adds to the running game, but you're not running the ball enough. So the tendency there is, why is Lincoln Riley breaking his own tendencies of being pretty balanced in his career to not run the ball much? And you know, the stats may even out a little bit because you add in Caleb's sacks and you add in Caleb's scrambles, but like design play run calls, there's barely any. There's, I think, 15, I want to say, in the game. I know the running backs got 12. Zach Branch got one. I think Caleb had two quarterback draws. So, you know, if that's 15 out of 23 runs, so eight more, so that's 42 dropbacks to 15 runs.
Yeah.
That's not a winning recipe. And Lincoln Riley has talked about this. He's not a true air raid guy. He's not Mike Leach wanting to do that. So it just baffles me that he himself has gone away from it, because that's breaking the own tendency that he's had in the past as a play caller. So that's what is super surprising to me, and something that needs to be changed, to be honest.
He mentions the play calling stuff. I'm sorry, Jack, real quick. He talked about that. I think there was a question in the press conference. And this is a fair point for him. He's like, it was my track record for play calling is pretty good. Yeah, you've got a lot of Heismans and everything. I get it. And so that's why if you're going to question what's going on the defensive side, have at it. Like on the offensive side, it's tough because we know he's really good at this, but there's some baffling stuff. You mentioned like the Deuce Robinson one. It's a 3rd and 9 or 3rd and 10 play. Mekhi Lemon and Deuce Robinson, like you have two true freshmen in there that haven't played a whole lot. And they're like the main outside receivers on this critical down. Like it just
wasn't just once. They did that multiple times in the game.
It's kind of just some of the stuff is just weird where it's like someone's really good at their job, and Lincoln Riley's really good at this, but there's stuff that you're just like, it doesn't make that much sense.
And the play calls on the two-point conversions that they had to have didn't seem like Lincoln Riley's best. They showcased in the first quarter a ton of stuff. They ran the ball 8 times with the running backs in the first quarter. They were running the ball very well, more than Utah entire was giving up per game in the rushing game for the entire season. USC ran for more than that. It was a convoluted way of saying they ran the ball very well against Utah, who is normally a hard team to run against. They're showing off some trickery where you've got the QB draw, then you've got the Zachariah Branch play at the goal line. Getting the ball in his hands has proven to be something positive for the offense. And it felt like for the rest of the game, they didn't commit to the run. There wasn't a whole lot that was creative as well, which is something that we've touted and praised Lincoln Riley for, as we've said this entire year. Well, he's got plays in the playbook that are really going to knock the socks off a defense. You can't prepare for him. He's going to get the ball in Zachariah Branch's hands. He's going to have, Branch and Mario Williams on the same side of the field do something crazy. And we didn't really see that even when the offense was struggling, and it felt like there were different points, you could use a play like that to kickstart the offense. You could use your offensive line that was playing well and your running backs who were playing well to kickstart a slow passing offense. And I think that's where people get frustrated, is if the passing offense is, killing it like they were early in the season, then you're fine with them not running the ball because you're passing the ball for 400 yards a game, you're scoring 60 points. When the passing offense is struggling, you have to be able to have it within yourself to go back to the run. And Lincoln Riley did say, I think I'm an okay play caller, kind of sarcastically after, going back to his resume. But this season has not looked the same. This is the worst performing offense stretch, at least, that he has had as a head coach. And it at that point, you can't keep going back to the resume after, probably 3 weeks now. Because the last 3 weeks has not looked like the same resume that he had coming into USC.
Yeah, I did like the change they made on the offensive line. Mason Murphy and Jared Kingston. They scored touchdowns in the first two drives. That was good. You mentioned the two-point conversion, and both plays were bad. Probably shouldn't have gone for them to begin with. Chasing points there, but whatever. But I didn't see this on the broadcast. I haven't watched the broadcast yet. I don't know if you did, but on the first two-point conversion, someone on the peristyle, I forget who it was, pointed out that they didn't have the right offensive lineman out there. Mason Murphy wasn't out there. He tried to run in late. So they get the pick six from Kalen Bullock, and then they kind of screw up the blocking on the two-point conversion. Just some of the attention to detail, like if you're going to go for two, like know you're going to go for – I guess it's a quick change play and all that stuff. But if that was your plan, then you kind of have to know to go in there. But there's little things like that where you don't get all the right offensive linemen going in, and you blow the two-point conversion, and now you're chasing points, and obviously they lose by two. If they just kick two extra points, that's a tying field goal and not a go-ahead one or winning one.
Yeah, and these are the type of things that have plagued them, actually. It's not just, the play calling on offense or the play calling on defense or this mistake or that mistake. The organizational stuff has been an issue for USC. I haven't seen that play. I didn't finish rewatching the entire game. I was in the middle of the third quarter. But, the last week they had 10 players on an extra point. The week before that, they had 10 players had a call timeout on a fourth down defensive play. And then they had 10 players against Arizona as well on what would have been the game-winning field goal if Arizona would have made it. So, those type of things are mistakes that need to be fixed at the, you know, at the administrative, at the coaching level before you even talk to about players. Like, you have to be able to get 11 people on the field consistently.
Yeah.
And that's become an issue apparently. So, you know, those type of things are the ones where you're looking at like, why, you know, these weren't happening last year. No, 10 players on the field happens every once in a while. Quick changes and things like that. But when you see a consistent pattern 3 weeks in a row, that's when you start going, why is this suddenly becoming an issue? Why are they having these type of issues? You know, ever since the bye week, you know, going to the bye week, and maybe it's just because the opponents were terrible. Maybe that's it. They looked so much crisper with everything they were doing. Since the bye week, it, you know, there's just been things where it's just very herky-jerky, inconsistent, and that's offense, defense, and special teams. So I think you're seeing mistakes kind of all over the place like that. So it's been very confusing, to be honest.
Yeah, we've got another super chat in here. Thank you guys for all the super chats. And we'll always get to them first whenever you put them in, just as a PSA. This one comes from Phil on YouTube. $5. He said, the fans saying that Lincoln Riley should be fired and is the most overrated coach in USC history need to calm down. Your guys' thoughts?
I would agree.
I would completely agree
with
that.
Yeah, it's like, maybe it doesn't work out. I mean, you could argue it's already worked out. I mean, they went from 4-8 to 11-3 and won a Heisman. So, like, but that gives you the expectations of winning the conference, going to the playoff. Now, it's going to be easier probably to get to the playoff going forward after the season because you're going to have an expanded playoff. You'll be in the Big Ten. But, like, Oregon and Washington look like they're really good teams. Obviously, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State. So, you're going to be, like, you got to beat, you know, half of those teams or whatever to get there, or whoever you're playing that year. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like if you feel like this is just not going to work, I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, most teams would trade with you at this point, you know, as far as Lincoln Riley being the head coach. Now, he took over for a legend, which isn't always easy, but an established program.
At Oklahoma.
I was going to say, yeah. Like,
yeah. No, not here. And then at USC, it's rebuilding. You know, you need a phoenix from the ashes kind of thing. You still got all the tradition and everything, but the team was a dumpster fire. So he's, you know, we saw Sark take over like a dumpster fire at Washington, and, you know, they were really bad and got them to be okay. Like, he's already got USC to go from dumpster fire to like really good, but now you expect it to stay really good and all that. So yeah, I think that's kind of overrated as far as, you know, I think you're rolling with, as long as Lincoln Riley's going to stick around, you're going to roll with him. And no, he's 40 years old. He's going to keep trying to build on this. He's seemed very enthusiastic about the future and how long he's going to be here. So kind of trust him his word and see where it goes. But this is way too early to be like, no, he's not the guy for the job. It's like, okay. I mean, that seems a little crazy to me.
Yeah, the fire Riley people, like, who are you hiring instead of Riley at this point? Like, who would want to come into a situation where you go, yeah, I know you're paying someone $10 million a year and you're going to buy them out for $80 million, but they lost two games in a row. Like, what coach has been like, oh, I'll sign up for that. Yeah, I'm in. You have to look at perception as well, like of what you're creating when you fire a coach. Like, if another coach looks at it and be like, that does not look like it's a tenable situation, does not look like they know what the hell is going on over there, then I'm not going into that situation. So does Lincoln Riley need to get better? Yes. Can he get better? Yes. But is he still damn good? Yes.
Yeah.
So, and that's part of the reason why it's so baffling, I think, right now, that, you know, the issues that they are having, because one, it is on the offensive side, where it's his baby, and the defensive stuff, you know, you look at it, and I, like Ryan, I thought the defense would get better, and I actually thought the defense would get better as the season progressed, and that's, you know, last night's game, you look at it and be like, yeah, I just don't see that that's happening.
No.
So, you know, what I thought at the beginning of the season, okay, you bring in transfers, it may take a little bit of time. The freshmen they're excited about could take a little bit of time. But second half season, when you need the defense to be better, I thought it would take off and be a little bit better. And that's not been the case. So, you know, I would not be surprised that there's, you know, big time changes coming there probably at the end of the season, probably not before then. No, people are going to be upset. I know some other programs have fired some people, but that is not Lincoln Riley's MO. I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So, you know, just, you're going to have to grin and bear with it right now. And, you know, we talked to players when we get the opportunity. We actually talked to Ryan and I talked to Solomon Bird a little bit earlier through House of Victory.
Yeah.
And, you know,
check that one out.
They say the same things, is that they're close. Now, close is not good enough. You know, football, close is, it will keep you in a game. Close doesn't get you wins, though. But can they close that gap? And I actually asked Solomon that question. What does it take to close that gap? So you have to go, you know, listen to his answer there. But, you know, they feel like it's not, you know, it's not they got to make these big leaps and bounds. It's just everyone's got to do their job. And that comes down to me to coaching is, all right, how do I get 11 guys to actually do what they're supposed to do? Whether do I have to simplify things? Do I have to get different people in there? Whatever needs to be done, that 11 people are doing their job. I think that's the biggest issue they have right now. They got to be able to figure that out. And, you know, some of the play calls are still baffling. You know, the one of the wheel routes, you don't have anybody over the top. And USC, because they want to cover those tight ends with safeties, because they got burnt so much last year, especially against Utah, with the linebackers covering them, and keeping Kalen Bullock over the top, bringing the other safety down occasionally, but they don't want to keep Kalen Bullock over the top. We're going to have him in coverage. So because of that, you're leaving the linebackers kind of free as an underneath zone, and that means there's no one over the top. So if you get beat, you're going to get beat big, and that's what's been happening. That's why USC is so bad nationally rankings in their explosive plays. They're 117th in the nation, and or no, 127th, excuse me, not even 117th.
Out of like 134?
Out of 131, I think. Okay. I don't know if there's some provisional teams. I don't know where they're at in the FBS, but 127th on pass plays of 20 yards or more. Okay, well, maybe a little bit better against the run. 118th on runs of 10 yards or more. All that's in RJ Abadia's deep dive into the numbers, so go check that out as well. But yeah, the explosive plays are killing the defense, because when they get some explosive plays, that kind of counteracts it a little bit, but your one sack doesn't matter if you're giving up a 60-yard touchdown on a wheel route.
Yeah.
I will say that Lincoln Riley has never had a four-loss team before. If USC goes 2-2 the rest of the way, they finish with four losses. That is Lincoln Riley's worst season of all time. Sign me up for a coach 100% of the time that their worst season is four losses in college football. I mean, there are blue blood teams that will sometimes miss bowl games. USC missed back-to-back bowl games, you know, a couple years ago. They went 4-8. You're going to take your head coach's worst season being four losses. Who knows, maybe that happens a couple more years in a row when they move to the Big Ten. It's hard to tell. The schedules do look tough, and the schedule was really tough this year, but when your coach's worst season is four losses, I think you're okay with that. But they do need to get better, and I think firing him would not make a whole ton of sense. We have two more Super Chats in here, so we can't get to callers and questions. If you guys do want to leave your questions, you can make sure to do that in the chat. If you want to call in, 5124-TUNNEL. We'll get to these two Super Chats, and then we will go to some live callers. Christian on YouTube says, strength and conditioning is a concern of his. He said the defense looks smaller and lighter compared to these other big blue blood programs.
That's because they are. But that's not strength conditioning necessarily. That's body types you're bringing in. And the fact that you're playing, you know, a converted middle linebacker is your starting nose tackle or starting defense tackle beside Bear Alexander. Bear Alexander looks the part, right? They brought him in. Stanley Ta'afu beside him, undersized. Dejon Benton, undersized. Tyrone Tulenei is 27, 28 years old, still undersized, former rugby player. So you got transformed rugby player and transformed linebacker as your two D tackles beside Bear Alexander. So it's going to take recruiting to get him out of that more so. Like Stanley Ta'afu, Tyrone Tulenei, those guys are strong, trust me, for their size though. And, you know, they can add 30 pounds, but they're not going to be able to play worth a damn if they add 30 pounds. So, you know, they can't get taller. They can't get, you know, that's just not going to happen. So I don't think it's necessarily the strength and conditioning. You know, a lot of people kind of pointed that out. If their technique is right, they're not getting pushed around on the offensive line. And some people have pointed to that. So I don't think it's that, as far as strength and conditioning. So they just got to recruit.
They've also had
in the trenches.
They've also had some strength and conditioning successes. I mean, you look at what Kalen Bullock and Eric Gentry have done to their bodies in the last offseason. You look at Caleb Williams when he stands, you know, with his shoulder pads off in the press conference room, like he's built, they've got a ton of big players. I don't think strength and conditioning is the issue. I think it's, you know, technique and that stuff that you were talking about. Ryan, any thoughts or should we move on to the next
one? Yeah, let's move on.
All right. BDA underscore IV on YouTube says, do you think there is a culture or locker room issue? And also they ask, do you think Caleb is audibling out of run plays? So the two-part question there.
I mean, I think the chemistry is still good. And, you know, I asked Solomon Bird about, like, the team morale, and it seems to be, you know, that's one of the things that's impressed me the most is, like, you bring in all these players from everywhere, and they still had really good chemistry. And you have people coming in from outside the program that become great leaders and stuff. So I don't really think that stuff is an issue. I mean, I think the locker room stuff has been good. What was the second part of the question?
Do you think Caleb Williams is audibling out of run plays? Or someone asked earlier, too, do you think he's keeping the ball himself to pass on run plays on RPOs when he shouldn't?
It seems that's my gut is there's a lot of there's options. So we can say there's how many design runs. The most design runs I saw, I think, were against Notre Dame. They seem to do that a lot where they were having the least success running the football. Then when you're having more success, like against Arizona State, against Utah, which is surprising to have success against Utah because you're not running the ball quite as much. But it seemed like there was more design runs, you know, the previous game against Notre Dame. My gut is that there's RPOs and Caleb Williams' mind is trying to make the big play almost every time. And sometimes you just got to check it down or whatever. We're just not seeing a lot of that. There's design stuff that's going short, but not the stuff that's designed for like deeper and then check it down and pick something up. So that's my gut. You know, that's what I feel.
Yeah, I think pressing is the right word that you brought up a while back. But I feel like at times it feels like Caleb is pressing that I've got to make a play now to help this offense. We're being very consistent or a penalty has pushed us back. I got to make a play now. You know, it's not necessarily, hey, I got to go make a Heisman moment or I'm losing the Heisman and I got to go make a play. But my team needs me right now. I got to go make a play. And he's just trying to do – it feels like at times he's trying to do too much. And sometimes he's just got to run the offense and trust that the offense will work. And, you know, sometimes I feel like he's looking for the bigger play than necessarily is there. And instead of, you know, and that was the Notre Dame. You know, sometimes you got to throw it away and fight to live another day. Now, he's doing that at times as well, throwing the ball away and stuff like that. But just consistent, you know, that's the consistency of the entire offense, the entire defense, the entire team. It's not always there.
I don't think there's a cultural locker room issue either. Like, it's not like they're turning on themselves inside the locker room. The one thing that we got a little bit of a hint of from Lincoln Riley yesterday is maybe this team is looking a little bit too much at, you know, the outside noise. And I think it's funny because they talk to us all the time after practice. We don't pay attention to that stuff. You know, we're not paying attention to the outside noise. Like, anything that's said, you know, we're not paying attention to that at all. But Lincoln Riley was saying yesterday he feels like maybe the team has done that a little bit too much this season. And I know, Ryan, you mentioned it earlier. Maybe it's that they're looking at what the expectations were going to be. Maybe they're looking at what has been said about them week to week, but they tell us all the time they're not focused on that. But it felt like Lincoln Riley yesterday was hinting that that is an issue that they have had. And so maybe it's not a locker room issue where they're turning on themselves, but their focus isn't in the right place, according to Lincoln Riley.
Much easier to be a team that's coming off a 4-8 season, no expectations, than a team that starts the season in the top five with a Heisman Trophy winner coming back. Okay, there's pressure. People are gunning for you every single game. Everyone's watching me, all that type of stuff. And that pressure can break down 18 to, well, now you're 27-year-olds when you had Tyron Tilney in the mix. But, yeah, it can break some of those players down. And so are some of those guys being susceptible to that? Apparently, according to Lincoln Riley, it seems like the outside noise is affecting them a little bit. So what will be the rallying cry? That's the problem. One of the issues for me is, you know, people have said last week, they said, oh, this is a wake-up call. Or they said it against Arizona. It's like the wake-up call was at Arizona State. You played like crap against a team with, like, their 74th quarterback in there. So, like, why did you not wake up then? Okay, well, then the next week, oh, well, that's a wake-up call. No, Arizona, that's a wake-up call. Notre Dame, is Utah going to wake up? Like, is this get out? You know, have you fallen into the abyss, into the sleep, and you can't get out? Like, who's going to wake them up? Someone needs to come by and snap their fingers and, you know, get them out of a trance or whatever it is. But I don't know what the rallying cry has to be, but someone on that team has to make that happen, whether it's the coaches, whether it's a player, someone, if they want to change what is going on right now.
Yeah.
Because, yes, they are this far away on this play and that play and this play and that play. You know, Jack said something about, you know, we argued about after the game, should they have gone down, should Caleb Williams have gone down at the 1-yard line?
No.
And so we can argue that in a minute if we really want. But then I said, okay, well, what about Bear Alexander's penalty? And what about the scramble? And you can look at all these individual plays. And in a game that is won on a last second field goal, individual plays change the outcome of the game. One play changes the entire outcome of the game. He misses the field goal. There you go. Completely different feeling afterwards. But when you're playing well and that happens, it's much different. That's the Rose Bowl against Vince Young. Two electric teams. Everyone's playing well. And one little mistake changes it. USC is making mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake. And you're saying, well, if only one play is different. You got to start playing better. So what's going to be the rallying cry to get them to where they're playing better? And then if they start playing better, then they could potentially – they still can compete with Oregon and Washington, but they have to start playing better. And I don't know what it'll take for that to happen.
Yeah,
let's go to some live callers and we can maybe discuss that decision to maybe go down or decide to score quickly because it looked like Utah was letting them score. We can discuss that a little bit later. We've got three live callers in the queue right now. We'll start – and I'll preface this by saying – since we've got a bunch of live callers, we've got a bunch of questions, we can't make the show 3 hours long. Get your thoughts out within 30 to 40 seconds or else we will probably hit the stop button and then go with whatever we've got from there. But we'll start with Dave from Iowa. So he wants to call and talk about the future state of the football program. Hi, Dave. You're on Tunnel Vision. Dave, can you hear us?
Hi, this is Steve from L.A.
Oh, that's okay. Hey, Steve, what's up?
So for me, I think the issue is Riley over or under delivering on expectations. The success he came in with in year one, I think, set the bar really high. And I think going into year two, there was almost no chance that he could even deliver the expectations that we have, which was to make the playoffs. And I think the way that he came in, he set the tone by pulling talent out of the portal to win now or win soon, which kind of makes it look like he was hyper-focused on building a team versus building up the program. Just want to get your thoughts on that.
I think expectations are real, and Shotgun brought this up. If you remember, Lane Kiffin in the sanction years, they go 10-2, can't go to a bowl game. They come into the season super highly ranked, number one in one of the polls, I believe. And, they lay an egg. And you had Matt Barkley coming back and everything. And, there's some similar things that happen there. But it's different having a target on your back than not. But I think Lincoln Riley set those expectations where he talked about championships and he talked about winning now, not building. So, I feel like that's something he was saying. I think expectations can kind of change how how you do things, and it's not easy to live up to them all the time. Where 4-8 to 11-3, that's sort of gravy. Now it's like, okay, you're expected, and it changes the narrative a little bit.
Yeah, and they're not playing they're not meeting those expectations. But if they were playing well, you would feel like, oh, they just got to make this little adjustment, versus why the hell are they playing so bad compared to last year? I think that's what is anger riled so many people. And then the other part of your question, talking about building through the transfer portal versus building, this isn't the NFL where it's like, all right, we have a certain amount of capital. We can either use it on draft picks or we can use it on free agents and trade versus back and forth. It's you go out and get the most talented players, and the transfer portal is the way you do it the quickest, because they can bring in 30 freshmen. But how many of those guys are going to be impact guys immediately? You got Tackett Curtis, you got Braylon Shelby. You're not getting the top 30 guys in the country. That's not how it works. So you got to go get those transfer portal guys. And it was amazing last year, and still probably the most incredible part of all last season was the fact that they were able to bring that whole unit together. And unfortunately, that just has not happened at the same rate or in the same way as it did last year as far as the culture and the camaraderie of the team, the chemistry. And that was what was the most surprising thing all last year. And so, but then again, then you get the expectations of it. Well, they did it last year with all these new guys. When you're bringing in less new guys this year and you've already established it some, you should be able to just ride right into it. And that hasn't been the case this year. So expectations are hampering them. If you just flip the seasons, USC fans would be ecstatic right now. If they, say they go 2-2 on the way out of here. So what is 8-4 or whatever to finish the regular season? They went 8-4 last year and they went 11-3 this year, people would be ecstatic and say, oh, the program's on the rise and doing all this thing. But when you establish those expectations, you got to live up to them.
Yep.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
I don't think that the way that they've gone about, you know, the transfer portal and trying to turn the program around as quickly as possible, I don't think that is a sustainable way to continue to build a championship level program in college football year to year, being a contender. Like, you're seeing what Georgia and Michigan and Alabama, like what they have done. But I also think that, did you want Lincoln Riley to come in and say, well, you know, we're not going to go all out in the transfer portal because we're going to try and build this program for the long run? Like, no, you wanted to see him try and compete in the first year, and he brought them almost to the college football playoff. And maybe that isn't the most sustainable way to go about building a program going forward, but Lincoln Riley hasn't had many seasons where he isn't trying to be a contender. And I don't think, if you're a USC football fan, you would want him to come in and say, hey, in year one, we're not going to try and compete this year because we're going to try and build it right at the foundation. So they're trying to do both at the same time. I think they've been more successful in, you know, on one side when it's in the transfer portal as opposed to high school recruiting. And I think that they will need to become a better high school recruiting team to build the program going forward. But you still have to try and compete every year.
Yeah.
We've got still three callers in the queue. David, yeah,
let's
is
go
our
through these faster.
Yeah.
My bad.
All right.
My bad.
David, hi, you're on Tunnel Vision.
All right. How are you guys doing today? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, David.
All right. So don't bring up the defense and Grinch again. I know the offensive line issues, but I had three rapid fire items I want you guys to talk about. You stole my thunder a little bit earlier in the program, but still want to have you talk about them. The first one is, it is ridiculous that Zachariah Branch gets two touches on offense. That's ridiculous. I was thinking back to Chip Kelly and DeAnthony Thomas. Zachariah Branch should be a Heisman contender. He should be feeding him the ball in offense. That's number one. Number two is, for the going down at the 1 yard line, I trust our offense more than our defense. If we had Georgia's defense, I agree, let's score. But we don't. We should have gone down at the one and then drain the time and then QB sneak it in. And then the last thing is, the running the ball with the running backs is getting ridiculous. 10 yards a carry almost for our running backs and only 12 carries. People talking about the fumble, but if you remember the Pete Carroll days when a running back fumbled, you gave him the ball right back to build that confidence. So just keep running it until they can hold us to 5 yards a carry. Those are my three things. If you could talk about those three things, that'd be great. You know the drill. Fight on, Frank the Tank. Steven, Ron, and Kyle.
All right. Thank you, David.
Thanks. Okay. Oh, three.
Which one do you want?
I'll do the touchdown thing. You want to do Zachariah? I had Zachariah Branch as, like, I needed for my keys to victory. He should touch the ball 8 times. He only touched it twice on offense, so that was bad. Here's the thing with the touchdown. This isn't a luxury touchdown. This is, you need it to take the lead. Like, this is not, you, if you go down at the one and you get a procedure penalty, now it's, you know, it's, so I don't think you can forego the touchdown, like, because you're not winning the game. If it's one of those things, if you're tied and you can, like, take longer to score or something, that's fine. Like, you need these points to take the lead. There's no way you're winning the game unless you get these points. So if you have an opportunity to get the points, I think you have to take the points. That's just my thought.
We can get to that in a bit, because I know Jack wants to talk about it too. Zachariah Branch, yes, more touches needed. Very interesting that they used him in a lot of different ways in that Notre Dame game. Used him in the backfield, used him here, used him there. Didn't necessarily see a ton of that in the Utah game. Didn't see a bunch of motions or much else there. So that was disappointing. I don't know what the right word is. Baffling. Not as harsh as baffling. Questionable. That's a good one. And then the third one, yeah.
Run
the
ball
to the running backs.
Run the ball.
Give the ball to running backs, or even put Zachariah back there. You know, he did pretty good with the one touch he had out of the backfield against Notre Dame.
Yeah, I agree with all three things the caller said, and we'll talk about the decision later. Still more callers in the queue. We'll go to Frank next. Hi, Frank. You're on Tunnel Vision.
Hi. First off, I want to tell you, I love your show. You guys are great. And your previous caller, David, I totally agree with him. But I have one rapid-fire question for you guys, and it's about the Notre Dame game. I tell you what, I think this one is on Lincoln Riley. And the reason is, I think we went to Notre Dame without any planning, without any preparation. That's my opinion. I was there in South Bend when Pete Carroll won with Bush. He came with underdog with a plan. But we went there, the only plan we had was Caleb Williams, go ahead, pass the ball. And I believe Notre Dame came prepared. I think we could have won that game. What's your opinion?
Thanks, Frank. I mean, it's hard to argue when you look at the results. It's like they didn't look like they had much of a plan. I mean, I think they did, to be fair. I mean, you don't go in without a plan. They just sure didn't look like they had a plan. I guess that's
so. If they did, it wasn't a good one.
Yeah.
The plan didn't work. Or they had a plan. The plan was to run the ball and to try to, you know, to be able to force their way that way. They ran the ball way more than they have any other game this year. And
it didn't work.
It should have led to being able to wear down the defense a little bit in the second half. And I think you would have seen that more if they didn't have five turnovers, and then suddenly you're playing catch up, and it's not just that you're down, but you're down by multiple scores. So now you have to throw. So the plan got gobbled up basically by Notre Dame. You know, I thought it wasn't a terrible plan to run the ball the way they did. I think they should run the ball more often,
yeah,
and then be able to use play action and stuff like that. But in that case, it didn't work because they fell behind because of the turnovers.
Yeah,
and that was the couple of passes they tried to throw in the first half.
It's funny, the game that they tried to run the ball the most is the one they couldn't run the ball. Like, it was just, I mean, there were turnovers stuff too, but like
they couldn't pass the ball. So
yeah, but it's just in the games where they could run the ball, they like sort of shy away from running the ball. And then the one that was like, he was like running his head into the wall on this one. It was like, Iowa, like, what are you doing? Like, it just looked bad, which is one of the greatest storylines.
He kept getting behind the sticks and stuff with the false starts and things like that. And that's something that caused them. The fact that Utah won last night with the way their offensive line played, give credit to the Coliseum crowd. Actually had an impact and created some false starts and different things like that. You know, the Pac-12 referees didn't call much else in the game or much else correctly, but some of the false starts that pushed Utah back, and yet they still overcame them each time in that final drive.
Yeah. Particularly.
All right. One more call in the queue. Dave from Iowa is right this time. I read it wrong last time. Hi, Dave. Quick thought on Tunnel Vision.
Hey, guys. First of all, does the number one offense have a hurry-up offense or a hurry-up package where you don't sub out? Because that was the reason why Lincoln Riley and the offense didn't have momentum and could have, and you know, you could argue that it, you know, could have cost them the game. And second, you know, I keep receipts like Dion. In the spring, Lincoln Riley said less than 11 wins, this season's a failure. Are you guys ready to ask that question if another loss comes in the regular season?
I mean, we can ask stuff about if the season's a failure or not. I think that's been asked before. But
basically, said no to that question yesterday.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I mean, we have to kind of wait to see how this plays out. You know, if they win a bunch of games and, you know, make the Pac-12 championship game again, it's like that. It's kind of a moot point. But what was the first one? Like
substitutions. Yes. So the NCAA has to make an adjustment to this. The rule where the defense is allowed to sub. I completely agree the defense should be allowed to sub because you saw what Chip Kelly was able to do, and it was wrecking teams, to be honest, because you were playing way too many snaps because of the way the tempo they were running. So they put in this rule where if the offense subs, the defense is allowed to. And it makes sense. You're allowed to match and say, okay, they're bringing in five wide receivers. I want to get some DBs on the field versus I have our jumbo package in for defense. That makes sense. It can't take 21 seconds. The one play that everyone was showing yesterday, it was 21 seconds that the referee had his hand over the ball. The play clock's 40 seconds. You get to play in the first 10 or so, and I think the announcer was like, well, they just waited too long to get the play call in or something like that. It's like, there was 25 seconds when the sub was in and USC was at the line ready to go, and the referee says no, and they got down to three.
I saw someone on Twitter tweeting it like that. Utah sending like their biggest defensive lineman.
That
is, like,
exactly. That
just
video.
Just like slowly running on and off the field.
Well, they were doing it and then waiting to get all the way to him and tapping him, and he'd be like, oh, is it me? Okay, I'll go. And then I'll go. And literally 21 seconds of the play clock.
But when that keeps happening, I think if you're Lincoln Riley, you just keep the same package in and don't let him substitute.
But then you're letting Utah win this little battle that's going on.
I mean, you're not winning the battle by letting a guy take 21 seconds off of the play clock or whatever. So, I mean, I would just be like, all right, well, we're not going to sub out. If you're going to start doing it, we're just going to run a play. And there was an opportunity where there was a guy running off the field and Caleb Williams could have snapped the ball and didn't. So I think at least if you're not going to you have to be able to combat what's going on there. So if you can catch them where you can get them offsides, you got to snap the ball. I think you have to be ready. And it just didn't seem like USC was ready. That was upper hand Utah all the way. They were getting the upper hand in that whole exchange.
I'm just talking in general. I'm not even talking about it necessarily being Utah-USC. It's so annoying if you're watching a game and you're like, well, we can't play football because there's a big guy trotting. Like, it used to be – how much more fun was it actually to watch when the big guy had a sprint off the field? Like, oh, is he going to get off? Is he going to get – like, it created some tension. But no, now we got to wait till the trotter gets off the field before we can play football. Oh, wait. You guys – we're not going to stop the clocks for the chain anymore. They're just cutting out more and more plays out of the game.
Yeah.
I want to watch college football. I don't want to watch people trotting, and I don't want to watch the referees. And yet the Pac-12 gives me all that over and over and over again.
Holding call on Washington and Arizona State. Not going to get you started on that one. All right, we've got questions in the chat. Let's go rapid fire through all of these.
The first
one comes from John on YouTube. It's a take it or leave it. He says, as currently coached, USC will not beat Washington, Oregon, or UCLA. So I guess your thoughts on whether USC goes 0-3 in those games.
Leave it.
I'm going to leave that one as well. I think they win at least one of those.
People want to say that someone's like, oh, they're going to lose to Cal. They're going to get killed by Cal. It's like, I mean,
Cal's.
Have you ever watched Cal? Like, I get it. Like, USC's not playing well, but holy shit, people. You're like, oh, they're going to lose all their games. And the next, they're going to go 6-6. Someone said in the chat, like, Ryan won't address that they're going to go 6-6. Like, you really freaking think they're going to go 6-6. If you think that, like, go ahead and come back if they do. And I'll be like, nice job. But if you're a fan of the team, that's not what I would really be focused on. I certainly wouldn't be betting on something like that happening.
Well, we were so close to rapid fire before Ryan had to rant. So we'll keep going.
Sometimes
rapid
you need
fire.
To rant.
Socrates on YouTube says, is this year's team worse than last year's squad? He thinks last year's team would win easily because it's a better offensive line and you've got Thule and Mekhi.
I think you've got a shutdown corner, Christian Roland Wallace, and I think you've got elite pass rush. This year is just in a combination. So I think those 2 points, the biggest difference is just the offensive line. So you're comparing that to, you know, last year's defensive line. You're comparing the two lines. So I think it's pretty kind of a toss up because once again, you have a lot of the same guys. So I'll take the guys 1 year older.
And it's not even just, but I'm not looking at guys. I'm looking at team. They seemed like a better team last year. So I would take last year.
Are we saying that the first team has Caleb Williams playing at Caleb Williams last year level, and then this year has Caleb Williams playing at his current level?
Yeah, I'm looking at this level.
Or are they playing it's the same Caleb Williams on both sides? Because I'm taking last year's team if they've got last year's Caleb
Williams. Yeah, I think it's last year's everybody.
But I also think, the cohesion is a big point of that. Beck on YouTube says, considering Utah had a second string pig farmer as a quarterback and almost all their skill players injured, did this seal Grinch's fate as a defensive coordinator?
I think he's third string, to be fair. But which he was. Like, he wasn't the and he was a walk-on previously. I don't see how you bring Alex Grinch back. To me, this was like, if you make a run and you want to keep him, that's fine. I don't think there's a way that you could do that now. And if Lincoln Riley does, personally, I would think that's a mistake, but, you know, that's just me.
Okay. TC on YouTube, and I'm going to paraphrase this question. Do you think the players are – do you think it's a disservice that the players aren't being made available after a tough game?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Shotgun tweeted this. I've been doing this over 20 years. I've never seen something like this before. To do it 2 weeks in a row is you lost. You lost the game, but you still, you know, this is something that you do. You talk.
Look, are you building football players? Or are you building men? I mean, that's the whole question. Every coach will talk about, I'm not just here to build a football player. I'm here to build him to be a better man, to be a better husband, to be a better father. If you get fired from your job, are you just going to hide it from your wife? Like, they had layoffs at the office, honey. But I'll tell you 6 months from now. Like, you got to go and face the music. And, like, I know some people are going to say, well, they shouldn't have to talk to you at all. It's part of building your character, for one. So you should want your players to do that. And, you know, and you should want them to feel the pain of that game. Yes. But you shouldn't want them to say, have to go face the music and say, you know, I don't want to have to face the media after a loss like that. I'm going to use that as motivation or whatever it may be. But it just feels like it's a disservice to the players if you're trying to build them as people to just say, you know what, I'll shield you. Are you going to shield them the rest of their life?
Yeah.
Because that's basically, I'm pretty sure that was Lincoln Riley's thinking, is that I don't want them, I know this hurts for them, I don't want them to have to go through it. I think that is it. I mean, the alternative is I want to control the narrative and I don't want anyone else to say anything. That's the alternative. So I'm going to say I think it's him trying to shield his players and be protective of them. Are you going to be able to protect them the rest of their lives? Or are you going to make them into men that can handle their own shit?
Yeah.
Like, and I had people formerly in the USC Sports Information Department reach out and go, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of the things that makes you USC's players has been forever, makes them unique. It's even in that NLRB, National Labor Relations Board document that they think it's educational for them. USC put that in a in a legal brief. So it's not just my opinion. But that USC's players
good, yeah.
are better prepared. And we hear this from NFL media all the time that, man, the USC players, we love going to them and talking to them because they have handled the media. They know, you know, the right things to say, all the type that they can understand the questions you're asking. You know, they weed through the BS of a bad question or whatever it may be. And I think it's just a disservice to the players and to the fans. I think the fans want to hear from their leader, the leaders of the team, to find out if it's better. So, you know, if you think it's just about us, because that's what the reactions we get is, oh, you media, you think it's all about you. No, I think it's about if you're in this as a coach, you're in it to be a teacher and to be a builder of character. And I don't think that you are helping the players to become better men in the future by protecting them at this juncture.
And people are saying, you know, they're not professionals. They're not obligated to speak to the media.
They're making way more money than me. Come on, guys.
there's one thought about it. But then also, they are if they're training to play in the NFL, sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you can get fined if you don't show up to talk to the
media. There is no choice. You have to speak to the media. You have to be available to the media. And that's why the whole Marshawn Lynch, I'm just here so I won't get fined. Because literally, if you are not available in your locker for the media, you get fined for it.
Yeah,
and it's part of your job duty. Now, it's not the same as a college athlete. Now, some of them are being paid handsomely, and like I said, a lot of them are being paid way more than I am. Come on, Ryan. But it's
catch
part
passes.
Of getting. I used to
run faster.
But it's part of not the occupation. But it's part of the learning experience, the collegiate experience is talking after. I mean, and I played at D3 school and I talked to the media.
Yeah, in the NIL world, you do want – the more quotes you have out there, you want to promote yourself. And this is all part of it. And it's one of those things – Jack's going to graduate from college soon. Every time you go for a job interview, it's good because you're getting experience. You can interview for a job that you don't want, but you're getting asked questions. Oh, they asked me this. I didn't even think about that. So next time you go, and it all helps. And if there was a player that just didn't want to talk to the media, I mean, we really don't talk to them because they're not very good to talk to anyway. So, but most people do. You know, most people want to, like, you know, with everyone we've had for House of Victory, they're like 30 minutes long. People are just talking, and we're having a great time with them, and they're enjoying it. Maybe you could justify having only two players in Lincoln Riley on the road at Notre Dame. But when you're at home like that, like, certainly never seen anything like that. That's like, this is like only Lincoln Riley and that's it. That did not sit very well with me. So I'm sure we're going to have to talk to USC about this at some point. Because, like, are they never going to talk after a loss? What's going on here? But 20 plus years, never seen something like that.
And practices were shorter this week. We were told week one of the season that no coaches or other coordinators will talk at any point after the game, even though we got Alex Grinch a little bit last year, even after some tough games. This year we were told, like, before the season, he won't speak after any game. I put it on Twitter last night. It's like the grip has just been consistently closing. We were in practice for a combined total of like 10 minutes across 2 days this week.
And previously, once upon a time, there were open locker rooms. The sanctions stopped that. And then it was, as USC's players flowed out, just to give you guys the behind the scenes of when we normally would get interviews, as they flowed out the tunnel and went up the tunnel to the bus or to see their families, to walk back to campus, whatever, we could grab them. And they have the option. There's plenty of players like, hey, can I grab you? And either I don't want to talk because I had a bad game or whatever, and that's an option for him. Or my family's waiting on me. I haven't seen so-and-so forever.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, we'll catch you on Tuesday. Catch you on Wednesday. You know, congratulations on the win or, you know, tough loss or whatever. And they're all on their way. Now they don't get that option. We get certain people brought into a room to us. And so, you know, because I love talking to the random person that's on a special team or something. I see something, you know, because I like getting those tidbits to present to you guys to give a little bit extra. And those got taken away last year. So that is the tightening of the grip that has happened over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go to the next question. Phil on YouTube says, what other moves does Lincoln Riley have to make besides hiring a better defensive coordinator, in his opinion?
Probably rethink how you run special teams. It just seems like it'd be better to have someone overseeing the whole thing. I know he's given an explanation of why, but to me, it just seems like it needs a little bit more oversight.
I would agree. I think you've got two coaches dedicated to wide receivers right now. That's a position that has been disappointing over these last couple weeks. I feel like they'd be better off with one other staffer. Being a special teams coordinator, and Lincoln Riley has said, well, what will they do for the rest of practice? Put them on quality control to make sure you have 11 people on the field at all times, to make sure you don't have throwing people down after the play penalties. You can find a spot for someone. And if you can't find someone that can coach special teams and do something else, then you have to be better at being able to hire people if you can't find someone that can handle that duty.
I mean, I actually liked his explanation that he gave on Tunnel Vision of, you know, when he came in, he was able to kind of handpick.
Trojans Live.
Sorry. Should be on Tunnel Vision. We're going to get an exclusive interview. Get over here, Lincoln. But I like the idea. He said, you know, I hire people that had special teams in their background to be able to do that. But I think whether you come out and just give him a title – and say Ryan Doherty is the special teams coordinator. He's not on staff. I mean, he's not on field, but yeah, he is I would just give the title so that, you know, it can be all pointed in one direction. But that needs to be cleaned up a little bit. There's just a lot of things that need to be cleaned up right now. And I don't think that's necessarily a giant organizational oversight type of thing, but there's a lot of things that are a little bit falling through the cracks, and maybe Lincoln's trying to do too much as the head coach and an offense coordinator, and trying to remember, he wanted to focus on the defense a little bit more this year, and so I'm sure he's helping out with special teams. Maybe he needs to pull the reins back himself, maybe hire extra analysts or whatever it may be to help out. But it feels like there's some things that are sliding through the cracks a little bit right now.
Three final questions. First one comes from Cameron on YouTube. He says, Emmanuel Acho said in an article that Caleb should be fiscally responsible by sitting out for the rest of the season to prepare for the NFL. Should he sit or not?
No, that's not him.
I posted about this. It is terrible to give advice to a player to quit on his team, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Yeah.
Fiscally responsible is an interesting way to put it because, you know, what happens to your NIL then? I mean, these are type of things we haven't really – this is a new era.
Yeah.
You know, Lincoln, I mean, Caleb Williams, if he doesn't have the top NIL in the nation, then is it top 10 at least? We'll say at minimum it's top 10. Are there any stipulations upon that if healthy you have to play in games? Maybe there are. Maybe there aren't. Maybe that goes into the next NIL contract for somebody. I don't know. But fiscally responsible is an interesting way to put it. I don't think that Caleb would do that just because that's not his nature.
It's not his personality.
He cares way too much. If he didn't care, you wouldn't see the tears, you wouldn't see the anger, you wouldn't see all the emotion he has. So I don't think he will do that. But fiscally, I just thought that was an interesting way to kind of put it.
Yeah. Also, I'm not sure the NFL would have – NFL scouts would have a pretty good response to him, you know, deciding to sit the back half of the season.
NFL scouts, it doesn't matter. They'll still love his talents. Some teams will be like, oh, I'm not doing that. And maybe he slides to a better team. That was the whole thing when players started skipping bowl games. Like, oh, what are NFL teams going to think? Is any NFL team right now going to say, we will not draft anyone that skips a bowl game? No, they're not willing to do that.
They're looking for questions, though. They're like, oh, you didn't play the last four games. And so that'll be something that comes up a lot, you know.
And there's a difference between a bowl game and, you know, the rest of the season when your team's only lost two games. Trek Ranger on YouTube said, do you trust Lincoln Riley to pick a new defensive coordinator if he thought Grinch was a good hire?
I mean, Lincoln Riley's a really good coach, so yeah, I think you trust him to.
I don't know. Would you trust Urban Meyer? Because he hired Alex Grinch. He thought he was a good coordinator.
Yeah, fair point.
All right, final one is one we've been punting towards the end of the show. Super OC Holmes on YouTube says, asking why I thought Williams should slide instead of the touchdown. I'd give my opinion. It's the same as the caller said. I trust the offense to score from the 2 or 3 yard line in 4 plays, even if you get a procedure penalty, more than I trust the defense to not give up a field goal or more on that last defensive drive. And I understand if you get the 2-point conversion, the field goal doesn't matter quite as much because then you can go to overtime. I'm putting the ball in the offense's hands. You lost to Utah last year because your defense was the last side on the field. In reality, after the, you know, USC had like a minute on offense with no timeouts, but you lost because the defense couldn't get that final stop last year against Utah. Leave the ball in the offense's hands, especially when you see this is you're playing into exactly what Utah wants.
All right, here's my question to you, Jack. How many plays do you take a knee? Just that one? And you score on the next play going in?
I think
because if you take a knee right there at the 1 yard line, Utah's going to call a timeout. You score on the next play, what happens? The same exact thing plays out.
You wasted one time.
Utah doesn't call a timeout.
I slide at the two.
To set up their kneel down. That's it. That's the only thing that changes. So are you going to say, okay, well, we'll get to the one. Now take a knee.
I think you slide at the two and you run the ball up the middle. At the very least, you've at least burned one timeout. If they want to let you in the end zone, you've at least taken the one timeout.
But my point is exactly the same thing happens.
But you don't know how Utah plays with you don't know how Utah plays with one last timeout.
All they did with the timeout was move the ball over. They would have just kicked the field goal from the right hash. That's the only difference that timeout made.
But I'm saying that you don't like the game doesn't play out the same way.
The game is going to play out exactly the same way.
I don't know. I still think
if you're not going to say, well, no, take a knee on the first down, first and goal, take a knee as well. All right, now it's second and goal from the 3.
And I'm not taking a knee. I'm running the ball up the middle, and at least you've burned the one timeout. I know that you're saying hindsight, it wouldn't have mattered had they had one less timeout, but the decision, like, it is a net positive to have them go into that final drive with one less timeout. Even if it turned out that they wouldn't need it, it is the right decision to, even if they're going to let you score on the next play, take a timeout with you.
If you are going to score on the next play, if you can guarantee that. But,
well, I'm saying if Utah was going to let you score on the next play, like you're insinuating.
I mean, I'm not even insinuating that. I'm just saying you did score. Because I think Utah thinks, all right, we can get a four down stand. Yeah.
From the two?
We trust our defense.
That's one of those.
But do you trust – so say Utah does that, and they're not going to let USC score. Do you trust USC's defense to get a stop field – like can't allow a field goal more than you trust USC's offense to score on Utah's defense 4 plays from the two?
I would trust the offense more in that situation, but I'm also losing the game. And how many times have we seen the offense shoot itself in the foot?
How many times have we seen the defense shoot itself in the foot?
We've seen the offense? Because, well, at least you are ahead then. You at least got to give the defense a chance. Defense never even gets a chance if you don't score.
I think you have to, if you have the opportunity, it's not a luxury.
Yeah,
you're not ahead.
I thought that was a good way to
Ryan
put it.
I feel like this is, you have to take the lead when you can. Now you can't, there's like percentages and things like that, but this isn't, you know, you don't have the lead. The opportunity to get the lead is to get into the end zone, and if you can get there, then I think you'd rather have the lead and then worry about the other shit later. But I get it. I think people have done stuff like that. I personally wouldn't think that's the right thing to do, but I get when people are arguing it. But I think if you have an opportunity to take the lead, you got to take the lead.
How many false starts have we seen this season? How many times when Caleb scrambles, is there a holding call? And do you trust the Pac-12 refs not to call something?
Yeah, you could get an offensive PI call, like 15 yards. Like, okay, now you're screwed. That's the other thing, too. It's like if you hire the guy with an MBA from Harvard for the job, like your boss is probably not going to get pissed if it doesn't work out. Like, if you go down at the one and you don't get in and you just lose because of that, you could have scored. That looks way, way worse than if you scored and then give up a late field goal. Like that's a fireable offense if you don't get in at that point, because you could have walked in and you said, nah, I'm not gonna. It's just one of those things where get fired for that.
And the defense wasn't playing terrible at the time. I mean, the defense had played all right. And would have been, what, 4th and 4 without the Bear Alexander targeting penalty?
Yeah, that was...
And you wonder... See, that's where you go back to, well, okay, it was one play here.
Well,
one
but
play there.
I don't think this
if
is a one...
If it's 4th and 4, does USC get in? I mean, does Utah pick it up? Like, does that, if they have to run that fourth and four, do they run out of time to be able to get down for that extra one? If they don't have that 15 extra yards, are they going to be able to get down? You can go back and just nitpick all these small things, and that's what Lincoln Riley and his staff are doing over and over and over in each game, and that's the problem right now. Because they are not playing to their potential, and so now you're grasping at every single play that, oh, what could have been? Because there's all these small mistakes that are adding up to a, what, 40 or a 34, 32 loss to Utah. And as Reddit Utah put it, the trilogy with photos of Caleb Williams after losses to Utah.
Nice.
You're comparing plays to a decision, and I think you can't turn back the clock on plays. I don't think Bear Alexander chose to target and rough the passer. USC chose to score. They probably had a discussion, hey, Utah's probably going to try and let us score, or if they do, here's what we're going to do.
There was not a discussion that I can almost assure.
Wish we would have had the chance to ask about it last night. That was the question I was going to ask.
We could have asked more than six questions to Lincoln Riley.
I think it would have been interesting because he did drop back and then he scrambled for the touchdown. But like,
no, that was a design QB run.
Yeah, and Utah. I mean, the Utah did not try and they let him. They let him score. And then if there was not a discussion about, hey, what are we going to do if Utah wants to let us score, then the coaching staff did something wrong, in my opinion. And I think when you're comparing, yes, one play that the defense made saying, well, if they didn't make this play, then they win. You can't compare a play to a decision. I'm not questioning the play to score. I'm questioning the decision to score because I would bet that they're smart enough to realize, hey, Utah might do this. Here's our thought if they do. That's my opinion.
I don't know that Utah let them score, but
yeah, I'd have to go back.
Watching the playback, it doesn't. I mean, for how much they were fighting, like watching Cole Bishop run down Zachariah Branch, literally the play before, so it didn't look the same.
Why didn't they just let him score? Yeah, just let him score then. Like then it's better
because they go into that punt thinking, okay, they're gonna have the ball and need to go 70 yards. Utah didn't have a discussion before that play, but I'm sure Utah went out and said, hey, we trust our offense to go score on their defense more than we trust stopping them from the 15.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you still have to score a touchdown, we'll see. Well, I want to go back and look and see, but whatever. I mean, I think you can overthink things. Like, if you're going to take the lead, take the damn lead and just figure it out after that.
There's a lot of decisions. You can also, you want to go to another decision, Jack? How about 4th and 6 from the 44?
I would have gone for that too.
That's yes. a very
said it during the game.
Strange one from Lincoln Riley with how aggressive he normally is.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's one decision. What about that one decision?
I don't think you go for the 2-point conversion either. Like you weren't forced to, and plus they did it poorly. I mean, it was like you weren't ready for it, and yet an offensive lineman didn't even get in. I'd rather just kick the extra point, but that's hindsight. But just at the time, I was like, why are they going? I mean, it just didn't seem like it made a lot of sense. You're like chasing instead of just like, all right, here we go.
All right. Someone said, what's the point of even debating this now? And I'm getting to that point of agreement. Do you guys have any thoughts before we wrap up this episode? Obviously a tough loss, tons of ramifications for this season as USC's kind of goals have really slipped away. They're likely impossible to be reached now and ramifications for the program going forward. Any final thoughts?
Okay. So Cal sucks. They're not bad. They're not good.
Yeah. So was Arizona State.
Right.
So and Arizona Colorado. State.
But okay, this is college football. And weird shit happens. Like, Washington beats Oregon. Looks really good. They welcome in Arizona State, who sucks. And Arizona State's beating them until the very end. And they should have won, and they got all these calls at the end that screwed them over. That happens. Like, you're ups and downs, and it just happens in college football. Is it possible that USC loses a game to Cal? It is. I don't think it's very likely, but get a win. Then get your back, and you have an opportunity. You get to play Washington at home. We've seen them play well. We've seen them, Penix didn't throw a touchdown on the road at Arizona. They almost lost to Arizona State.
They won without an offensive touchdown.
Yeah, they didn't get an offensive touchdown in the game. So, I mean, this is wacky college football. So if you're like, USC sucks, they're going to lose to everybody. I guess they could, but they also could beat everybody too. And you're like, no, they suck, they can't. You've seen terrible teams do amazing things. Stanford looked like ass against UCLA last night.
And in the first half against Colorado.
And then they beat Colorado. Like, this is college football. Crazy shit happens. So just, they're just going to suck and lose every game. Okay, fine. How fun is that? Like, go have a good time then. This is all this crazy stuff. So there is a lot left to play for. How good would you feel beating UCLA at the end of the season. Whatever it is, there's opportunities there, and we'll see if USC can turn around and get things right. They might play like crap in all these games. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I wouldn't just say the season's over. Or everyone's terrible. So that's my thoughts.
Utah takes a lot of pride in what they did to USC last season. They entered the first game against USC last year already having two losses. They lost to Florida, and then I believe they lost another game. Yeah, I don't remember exactly who it was to. And then they beat undefeated USC to really knock them back. And then they still made the Pac-12 championship game, even maybe when they shouldn't have. They got a little help from Oregon. And then they beat USC again. USC could do that. Now, I'm not saying, you know, comparing the two programs in their current state, but like that is the position that USC is in. You can take pride in knocking someone out the rest of the way.
Yeah.
You can also take pride in just playing well.
That's true.
That would be nice to see for the USC fans, I think. I think they would take that. Start with that. Play.
Don't play like ass. Play good.
Yeah. Stop playing soft. Is one of them. And like, it's mentally soft with some of the penalties. It's, you know, coddling the players. It's, you know, physically soft too. Getting pushed around at times. Go up to Berkeley and be emphatic in something. They have not been emphatic in a road win. You know, so this season has not happened yet. And they haven't been emphatic in over a month, month and a half now, in anything they've done.
Yeah.
So emphatic would be the word of the week for me. Like, make something happen. And if you play to your potential, you'll do that. So, you know, it comes back to all those little things, all those single plays along the way. And, you know, one big play can drastically change an entire season. If USC gets some momentum and plays their potential, yeah, they can beat Oregon. Yeah, they can beat Washington. And they could be in the same situation that Utah was in last year, where you're going strong and you try to take a Pac-12 championship. And when's the last time they did that? It's been a long time. Yeah. So that would be something to play for. And that's something that also you would like to – and granted, we didn't talk to the players, but like you would like to see some fire. Like you see some of the other podcasts that they're doing and stuff, and like, yeah, it was a close game when they're playing. Like no one's coming out and being like, this shit needs to stop.
Yeah.
Like I want to see that from somebody. Now maybe there's some of that from behind the scenes because we don't get to see much anything, but like – I want somebody to come up publicly and say, like, we're going to play better. I'm going to make sure of it or whatever it is. And like, I don't know what you guys would think. To me, that'd be like, that's not soft. It's too much soft. Let's get some not soft. That's some hard edge to somebody. You know, that's something that, you know, I'm looking for this week to see if there's anything different or if it's the same thing. We're just staying in our routine. You know, we're going to fix the mistakes. No, you're not. You're going to have the same mistakes over and over. Yeah. You guys keep having the same mistakes over and over. So I want to see something that's different. And again, because we don't get to watch practice anymore, we can't say, oh, they did this thing different or, oh, they did that thing different. But you would like to hear at least afterwards, if someone talks to us, that they changed something up. We went to – remember the Chris Hawkins? They went to Clay Helton and said, we need to change this right here. Their leadership counselor, whatever it was, they had a couple players and said, we need to change. We need to play music at practice or what. That was a small change. But like someone needs to go and to the leadership council, to in front of the team, whatever it takes. Someone has to say, what we've been doing is not acceptable, guys. Of course, there's pressure. Of course, there's expectations. But what we've done so far this season is below average for what we anticipated, what we expected. It's not about outside expectations, about what our expectations. And no one, it seems, has done that so far.
Yeah,
I think that's what we were looking for the opportunity to do yesterday. That's why it's like when we don't get to talk to players, it's like if that's a coaching decision, you're limiting certain players from the ability to even do that if they wanted to. So we'll see how it goes on Tuesday and Wednesday. But yeah, you've got players across college football that they'll step up after a loss and say, it was unacceptable. I was terrible. It's not going to happen again. We're going to fix this. NFL, that happens all the time. We haven't really seen that this year. It's kind of a more like, you know, that's a play I don't normally make. Or, you know, we were a little inconsistent. We had some mistakes, but we're going to fix them. We haven't seen anyone kind of come out, lay it down on the table and say, you know, we suck. We're not going to let this happen again. We're going to get better. It's kind of just been like a, yeah, we're going to keep that same routine. So
as Jimmy McGinty would say, they need some heart, you know, from the replacements. And you think back to heart, gut-wrenching losses. Also, Lincoln Riley said this is gut-wrenching. I would say that loss to Georgia in the Rose Bowl was probably more gut-wrenching for him in overtime. Yeah. But yes. I digress. Gut-wrenching losses. Tim Tebow. Did he speak after that loss to Mississippi State?
He did.
Did it change their season?
It did.
Okay, let the players talk, guys.
I think that's a good place to end it. Thank you guys so much for watching. We had a ton of people in the chat, ton of callers. Sorry if we didn't get to your call or your question, but thank you guys so much for watching. If you're still here, make sure you're hitting the like button, the subscribe button, the notification bell. Wherever you are, we'll have Tuesday practice, Wednesday practice, and the last weekender in maybe USC history, at least as members of the Pac-12, heading to Berkeley next week for USC versus Cal. Be out there at home and hopefully see a lot of you guys out there as well in Berkeley. But thank you guys so much for watching the show. For Ryan Abraham and Shotgun Spratling, I'm Jack Smith. We will see you guys next week.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
IF is the most original and heartfelt movie in years.
Magic like this comes around once in a lifetime.
This Friday, experience it with your whole family.
Can we do it again?
IF, rated PG.